Welcome, everybody, into the JSOnline.com and PackersNews.com Packers podcast. I am Jim Ozarski, along with Tom Silverstein, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Long time no speak.
Yeah, we're back. We're back. It's time to get this baby rolling again. It's been a while. We had a nice off season, and now we're back to training camp.
Yeah, and it's, you know, all conjecture and hurry up and wait, I think, in our first few podcasts of 2019, Tom. And, you know, as we record this, first 4 days of scripted practice are over.
Yep.
Including the first days of shoulder pads and then full pads over the weekend. But I guess I'll just start with kind of the generic, you know, Packer fan question, because it's what we're asked all the time. I mean, what are initial impressions? We've been, you know, Packers fans have been sort of waiting for this.
Yeah.
For a while, since January, essentially.
Yeah. Well, it's different. I mean, every coach is different in the way he runs training camp, and there's always going to be subtle differences. I would say most camps, the structures are the same. They do a lot of individual drills. They do a lot of team drills. I would say LaFleur's is sort of a consistent, steady type of atmosphere. There's no big ups or downs. I didn't sense the first day in pads yesterday or on Saturday, or the second day in pads, Sunday, full pads, that there was any like added intensity to the practice. I can remember, you know, when McCarthy's would first put on the pads, he'd have them do those half line drills, which is a run drill where everybody knows they're running the ball, and it's big physical pounding at the line of scrimmage, and it would kind of get everybody fired up. And I didn't really see that from LaFleur. It was just a very steady, methodical approach.
Yeah, along those lines, do you think it's because, at least through those first couple days, a lot of red zone work, but also a team huddle before the final period, mm-hmm. which were nine cracks, whether it be third and goal or some sort of and goal scenario where the head coach brings them together and calls for a competitive session?
Yeah.
So do you think that maybe he tried to set a tone even with helmets and T-shirts in those first couple periods, so then when pads came on, it was just a thing they'd already been doing for 2-3 days?
I guess, but I didn't see anything that told me. I mean, the little red zone thing that they were doing was competitive, and offense was fired up and defense was fired up, but it wasn't. I just didn't sense the real physical nature of this camp, and maybe that's what it's going to be. Maybe it's not going to be real physical. Maybe he knows the secret to keeping guys healthy over the course of a whole season, because McCarthy couldn't and never found that secret. And so maybe they are going to approach training camp a little bit differently.
Yeah, along those lines, at least through the first four, right at about 2 hours, but then the last few days a little under 2 hours, and then our Pete Doherty flat out asked the head coach on Sunday, "Hey, where's the 2.5 hour session?" And Matt LaFleur basically said, I don't really believe in that. That's not that doesn't really matter." And cutting it short, or you know, that 20 minutes doesn't matter either. Who knows? I mean, I guess I haven't really poured through the injury reports in Tennessee, LA, and all that stuff in terms of soft tissue, but yeah. Clearly, it's something he believes in.
Well, McCarthy spent a lot of time on individual drills, on tackling drills, ball security, all that kind of stuff. They do that, but he completely is committed to doing a lot of 11-on-11, and that's what real football is. They do individual, you know, fundamental drills. But I get the sense that he's more into having everybody on the field and, you know, competing against each other instead of these individual drills or half-line drills, or, you know, they do some one-on-ones, receivers versus corners, offensive line one-on-ones. But, I didn't see any half hour spent on tackling drills.
No, right. And you know, for those who are listening to this and can't make it to Lambeau Field or anything, it's, you know, the individual, even position drills, he's split that up where it's not just receivers working with receivers. There's some DBs over there. I mean, he's trying to maximize field time. And then you mentioned the one-on-ones, at least with the linemen.
Mm-hmm.
I think a change, some of the guys have said, they get two reps in a row, mm-hmm. and then that's it. They're not kind of rolling through and doing two or three. Basically, in a word, efficiency, right? I mean, he's trying to maximize the time these guys have, even if it's an hour 50.
Yeah, I think it saves a little bit of time to go two, you know, a guy takes two reps right away. I think they wind up with the same amount of reps
right.
that they would, but maybe the drill doesn't take quite as long in this situation. Maybe it also gives the defensive lineman a little bit more rhythm. He gets to try two different moves, you know, back to back instead of waiting until it's his turn again. So it could, that's another subtle difference between coaches, between their philosophies and how to run practice.
Are you a fan of the playlist? Matt LaFleur wants that music loud.
Yeah, No, I'm not, because I'm tired of hearing the same songs over and over again. They do need to add some variety. But it is interesting that they play music, popular music. It skews heavy on hip-hop,
yeah.
Things with, you know, heavy rhythms that all through practice. I mean, it's nonstop. And he was asked about it today and said, really, it's for creating energy at practice. And I guess I understand that. It's a little annoying, you know. I mean, I don't have a problem with the music. I have the problem with hearing the same songs and
right.
coming home with the same dang tone in my head.
I mean, Old Town Country Road is just not...
I don't know.
That's not the earworm right now?
Yeah, I'm just an old codger, so maybe I am.
It is interesting. You know, again, as he says, it's a player's league. The players make, you know, his offense and defense work. And, look, the guys definitely, you could visibly enjoy the music the first 2 days, obviously with pads, a little less dancing around as the heat turned up, and so did the activity a little bit. But you know, again, another huge talking point from the time he was hired to now, of course, is how is he fitting with Aaron Rodgers? He's asked daily about the quarterback. How is the quarterback fitting with this offense? I would say the first few days, Tom, were a little ragged for the offense. You know, I know, and this, whether it be the team sessions and the quote defenses ahead of it, unquote. I mean, even in 6-on-7s, it wasn't great. Red zones, it wasn't great. Even some of the on-air throws were, I mean, I guess that's to be expected after 4 weeks off. What, I guess from these first few days, what have you maybe seen start to, I guess, through Sunday?
Well, one of the things I've noticed is that Aaron Rodgers throws the ball to Davante Adams all the time. He doesn't, I have not seen him spread the ball around a lot.
Not.
And I don't know if that's because Adams knows what he's doing within this offense better than everybody else. Certainly it's a comfort level in knowing that he's going to find Davante Adams somewhere. But I was really surprised even through day four that he hasn't spread the ball around all that much. And every time there's a big play down the field or you know, a big play to be made, it seems to go to Davante Adams. So that's either a statement on Rodgers or a statement on the wide receivers or the state of the offense, and I'm not sure which. I do think there's a lot of work to do on that offense. I noticed that they really rely heavily, or at least they have in the first 4 days, on the deep corner route. It's like they throw that all the time, and you know, maybe that is a matchup aspect that they continually find ways to get that open, or maybe they're just in the early stages of their offense and that's one of their plays that seems to get open a lot. I don't know.
Yeah, and that's saying something. So for people listening, through 4 days, look, Davante Adams isn't running every rep with Aaron Rodgers either. I mean, they are rotating guys, and it's different groups, and he's had throwaways. There have been incompletions. There have been – you can – for as accurate as Aaron Rodgers – and I realize this is practice too. I mean, I know he's stated at times he is working on things as well, but, you know, you've seen the ball on the ground. You've seen the ball in the defense's hands at times through 4 days. And it, but you're right though. I mean, Adams is a go-to guy. Geronimo Allison is that guy.
Yeah.
Haven't really seen a whole lot of Jimmy Graham getting his hands on the ball, other than maybe occasionally.
So I just went, in case you heard a bunch of crinkling, I just went.
Tom's opening up our Snickers.
To my notebook to see what it was like on the team drills. This is the first and 10 drill. They run a lot
on
first and 10. They don't pass much at all. So here is a team drill, kind of a move the ball. They set up different down and distances. So Aaron Rodgers gets four plays. So Aaron Jones left. Play action to Davante Adams. That was a terrible play. Throws in the flat to Aaron Jones and tosses to Trey Carson. He gets back in, play action to Davante Adams, deep crossing, deep right corner route to Kumaro, right guard run, and then you're back on to the next guy. Here's a come back again, first and 10 at the 12-yard line. Rodgers and shotgun, scrambles right, throws to Davante Adams. you know, third and 9, Rodgers shotgun to Davante Adams, deep over Kadar Holman, where Adams just jumps over him. So
yeah.
You get the idea. He's trying to be successful, but he's throwing to Davante Adams or the backs.
This is interesting because I remember, you know, in Cincinnati when Andy Dalton would just feed A.J. Green, we would tweet, guess what, A.J. Green's still good.
Yeah.
This reminds me, I guess we'll see how it all plays out. But obviously, the only true comp to this would be Julio Jones in Atlanta. Because the year that Kyle Shanahan and Matt LaFleur went there, they signed Mo Sanu, they got a couple other guys, but it was Devontae Freeman runs the ball, Julio Jones catches it, and then there's a couple other guys that caught like 35, 40 balls, something like that. So I don't know. I mean, maybe they're just gearing this where Adams still sees an inordinate amount of targets,
yeah.
And then you try to keep teams honest.
I'm going through the notebook, and I can't find Marquez Valdez-Scantling. I can't find his number on here. I can't remember. I mean, maybe I'm missing something, but I take pretty good notes. I can't find it. Oh, here's one, but that was Boyle. You know,
I'd say Geronimo Allison has got caught a few, but again, it's a couple, but yeah.
You know, it's like I'm used to those guys getting a lot of balls thrown their way and making plays out of them, and I just don't see it. Now, again, it's early, but all the big plays seem to be going to Davante Adams. Now, DeShone Kizer's made a couple of throws, got, I think it was St. Brown deep.
Yeah.
You know? So, anyway, that's something that we should definitely keep an eye on. When do those other guys get involved?
Yeah, and Matt LaFleur said he scripted these 4 days at the end of the mandatory mini camp. And so the off day, as you listen to this, is he's in his office with Nathaniel Hackett and scripting out the next four. So, you know, perhaps, you know, it's getting Aaron Rodgers comfortable, mm-hmm. which is throwing to Devontae Adams. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, they have run out so many skill personnel groupings from guys like Evan Bayless and Malik Taylor, who was signed just a few days ago. I mean, they're mm-hmm. rotating so often. You know, you mentioned the receivers. Honestly, Tom, the tight ends aren't really being targeted.
No.
In any of the plays that have currently been run. And so much so that it makes me think like that's been on purpose, that they just haven't gotten to them yet in the past game.
Maybe. Yeah.
But again, it's something to track going forward.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's installation time, right. And they're putting in different packages. But I don't think they put installations for Devontae Adams, and then now it's the Jimmy Graham installation or the tight end installation. It's red zone. It's third down. It's, first down. It's
so what does that say that Jimmy Graham, I think Jimmy Graham caught one touchdown.
Yeah.
In all of these red zone drills. Yeah.
Drill. I don't know. I don't know what it says. I just think it's an observation.
Right.
And I want to continue to watch and see what happens in the, you know, as the days go on. It's just 4 days of practice, but it's something that stood out to me.
Right. And that's a funny thing because we say it's just 4 days, but, you know, that first game is bearing down on it. I mean, it's early, but it's not. It's kind of one.
Yeah, I mean, so they got the
Texans
Friday night
in.
Thing on Friday, right. And then it's still another 2 weeks till the game. A little less than, no, less than 2 weeks, a week and a half. It's a Thursday night game, right? The first one, yeah. Yeah, it'll get here pretty fast, but next week will be a big week for them.
The last thing on offense is, you know, an observation we made through all of the OTAs, mini camps, is the emphasis on the run game.
Mm-hmm.
Even with no pads, they ran a lot. The first down was a run play, as you mentioned earlier. Ben Sermon's the running backs coach. The one time we got a chance to speak to him, flat out said, he's like, usually OTAs are passing camps. So he said he was appreciating the work. I think that's held through 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
Matt LaFleur told us in February, it all starts with that run game. Yep. And they're committed to it. They have been.
Yeah, I saw a drastic improvement, I thought, on Sunday when they had the full pads on, and you could see some of the traps and some of the outside zones with the cutbacks start to work a little bit more. I thought early on that you couldn't really see anything with the run game. Nothing was breaking loose. But now all of a sudden with, you know, guys able to knock other guys mm-hmm. off their feet. I saw a beautiful trap block. Billy Turner just destroyed Preston Smith, and it opened a huge hole for Aaron Jones. That's the kind of stuff when they get the pads on that you're looking for. And so I thought they had a good day running the ball on Sunday. I thought it was a real market improvement from what they had done the first 3 days.
Yeah, there's got to be something. I mean, there's a reason they practice all that, right? So some of it's feel, some of it's just the play call, but you would think after putting in all that work, they'd at least be able to pop a few.
Yeah.
You know, once full pads come on.
Yeah, yeah. And so I think he's got to be kind of happy about that. We'll see as the weeks go on how the run game works. And then we don't really know until they face someone who's trying to stop them. Specifically trying to stop what they run. And we might not see that until the first week of the season.
Yeah. A little insight into the quarterbacks and the run game there. If you're out at Lambeau Field, if you can make any of these opening practice, the Radnitsky Field, you'll see the quarterbacks really trying to sell their play fakes and continue on. That's sort of, I've been told, that has developed into a little informal competition among the four quarterbacks and selling it. but also because that's what the head coach wants. He says that in order for play action to work, they actually have to run the action.
Yeah.
Because that and one of the guys was telling me the one time they get a linebacker to actually lock eyes on him and hesitate, he's like, you know, Aaron Jones only needs that half step. So, you know, they are working on those things. So, as you said, we'll see. I don't know. Maybe the Houston joint practices will offer a little quicker insight in that. You would think one of those would be a padded day, even though the game would be Thursday.
Yeah, probably Tuesday. I think that would be a padded practice.
Yeah, so that should be interesting.
Yeah, yeah, that'll be make camp a little more interesting. So let's switch to defense.
Yeah, yeah, that's I mean, kind of the theme through all of OTAs and even here 4 days is all, you know, Mike Pettine's group year two feeling good. They, although, you know, look, Brian Gutekunst has given him a lot of resources.
Sure has.
And some of them have looked the part.
Yeah, I mean, I think you see the talent in Za'Darius Smith and Preston Smith. You definitely see the talent with Sean Gary. He's definitely a talented man, big and strong and quick. Quick. I was talking to one of the linemen who said he totally set for Gary's bull rush because he figured that's his bread and butter, and Gary put a move on him and went right around him. So it'll be that'll be a guy to watch, to continue to watch and see if he can work his way onto the field. Because right now he's not a starter.
Yeah.
But once they go to nickel, it's, you know, roll the dice. You never know who's coming in. So they can easily go with Gary, Preston Smith, and Za'Darius Smith together on the field.
Right.
Easily. So.
Oh, Kyler Sackrell, come on.
Yeah, they could go with all four of those guys.
They could.
You know, Za'Darius Smith and Rashawn Gary can play inside. Yep. They're big enough to play inside. And you're talking about nickel probably on third down.
Right.
That would be, you know, like your jet package.
Yeah.
But either way, they got some guys to rotate in there.
It is interesting because obviously the knock on Rashawn Gary coming out was, where are the sacks? Where's that sort of big play production? Of course, the general manager, not to recap draft night, but, you know, the GM said, well, you know, production is how you look at it. We see this and whatnot. Za'Darius Smith also fits that bill. I think, what, 8.5 sacks was a career high.
Mm-hmm.
Three of those come against Matt LaFleur's Tennessee Titans.
I don't know what to say about that.
So one could argue, I mean, there's a reason Baltimore let him go. You know, had he ever hit his ceiling? So, but you see at least the physical attributes. I'll be honest, the get off of those two, a little more explosive than the outside linebackers they have replaced from a year ago in this defense. So that alone, we'll see. Obviously, once game days come, how it all translates. But I would say Mike Pettine's defense looks smooth for his. The fits and spurts that the offense is going through, Pettine's really not rotating. There's your 11 starters. There's your 11 second teamers.
Mm-hmm.
The nickel is pretty set. I mean, really the only difference is because Josh Jackson and Darnell Savage Jr. are currently injured. So you have Raven Green, maybe surprising to some, but Raven Green is rolling out there with Adrian Amos. Tremont Williams has been your nickel slot corner.
Yeah.
And
played pretty well.
Yeah.
And accepted that role, too.
Yeah.
He's not a starter. Jair Alexander and Kevin King are the starters.
Haven't heard peep about that.
No.
From him. You know what I mean? He's definitely, hey.
And I watch individuals a lot at this point in camp. So I've watched King. I've watched some of the other corners. King had a beautiful play on Sunday. I can't remember who he was covering, but it was someone legitimate, and it was about three different moves, you know.
Oh, it was Jay Kummerle.
Was it? Yeah, that's right.
Jay Kummerle, probably one of the better route runners outside of Devontae Adams on the team.
All kinds of stutters and cuts, and King just hung with them like glue and broke the pass up. So You know, the whole thing with him, we always know, is that he's got tons of talent. It's whether he can stay on the field.
Yeah.
So, you know, I would have liked to have seen Savage at this point, but I don't know why a tooth is kept, wisdom teeth, yeah. Isn't that what it was?
Yes, he had his wisdom teeth removed.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. I don't know if he's still on meds or why they can't play him, but maybe they're... I don't know. I'm not even going to speculate.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's one of those where, as the coach says, you're cleared when you're cleared.
Yeah.
Right? So he's clearly dealing with that. So, yeah, Raven Green's the guy. People, you know, Josh Jones was a OTA storyline because he chose within his right to stay home for voluntaries, did not participate in the mandatory. So he has gotten a lot of reps. Second team, safety. He's also done that hybrid linebacker thing. But it does make you wonder. I mean, Raven Green's clearly, I guess if you would say, ahead of him.
Mm-hmm.
He's the third safety up. So it'll be interesting to see what happens when Savage Jr. returns and those reps kind of dwindle a little bit.
Yeah, that place is being held for Savage. He is the starting safety. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. Now, Josh Jones has been given the nickel inside linebacker when they go to the extra DB. So he's starting there. Now, I don't know if Josh Jackson, if that's a spot he would take if he were healthy. I don't know. But that's sort of where Jones was last year. And so they've at least given him that back. They sometimes use Oren Burks there in nickel. Sometimes they use Josh Jones. So that's a little bit something that'll play out and probably be subject to matchups. But it's, yeah, I mean, they look like a second-year defense. They look like they know what they're doing a little bit more.
They look fast. I mean, that's the thing, right? Bigger, faster is what Brian Gutekunst has said he wanted, said he was going to do.
Yeah.
You know, he mentioned after releasing Mike Daniels, which, oh, by the way, has happened of, you know, looking for longer guys, faster guys. And now, you know, there really aren't, you don't have small men in the front seven anymore.
No, they don't believe in that. And, you know, Daniels is still a good player, but I think he is now pigeonholed into that three technique inside rush guy, maybe even just on third downs. I think that's where his talent has taken him now, through injury, through age. And I think they felt like he wasn't as versatile as he used to be. And so they want versatility. They want to be able to move guys around. And they didn't think paying $10 million cap number for a guy that they couldn't move around was worth it. Now, Detroit, signs with Detroit, and you know he's going to have, you know, his hair on fire when he plays the Packers, assuming he's healthy, and that'll be a fun thing to watch. It really will. Lane Taylor and Billy Turner better have their A games on when they play him.
Yeah, he could still, you know, probably get 5-6 sacks. I mean, I think he still has enough in the tank as that sort of specialized type of guy, depending who was around him. Mm-hmm. Detroit's got some other pass rushers to worry about, even next to him.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right, Spoon, and especially, you know, the fans who have reached out to us through the variety of mechanisms, but which, of course, through Snapchat, Facebook, Twitter, email, all those good things. You know, how could the Packers be better without this guy? Look at someone's willing to trade, you know, pay him $9 million. How could you not trade him? But at the end of the day, they signed Za'Darius Smith, made him one of the highest paid line rush edge guys, but he also has that inside ability. You draft Rashawn Gary, 12 overall, Kenny Clark, you pay Dean Lowry. I mean, not that Mike Daniels can't play, just the fit wasn't there. How were you going to, the salary of $8 million to the snaps,
no,
to that, having to take them off the field if you want, I just named four players that they'd rather have.
Yeah. And the salary's got to go to Kenny Clark. They're going to have to sign him to a really big deal because he is a really good player. And they know it. The rest of the league knows it.
Right.
And Now, if they have him this year and next year under contract, but if they want to not have to pay Aaron Donald money, you know, or I mean, that's what happens when you hit the market, then they ought to work on something now.
Yeah, which makes all the sense in the world. Mm-hmm. Hey, partner, it's part of it.
Yeah.
You know, one thing I did want to ask you, and if you can find trends, or if it's coincidence, if it's just an offense trying to find its way. But this defense last year, I remember Tom, we'd do all these post games and there'd be no turnovers, lack of big plays. And since the OTAs, you have seen interceptions front to back. Mm-hmm. Specifically, even guys, Blake Martinez, James Crawford has a handful. I remember Brady Sheldon had one. I mean, it's all, Aaron Rodgers has been intercepted a few times.
Fackrell had one.
Right. Now, they all say, because I've asked them about it, said, well, it's early, but they also say there's a comfort level in the defense. They kind of know where to go. They can anticipate where they need to be to fill spots. However, they didn't do any of this last year. I wasn't here for camp. Can this build? Or does it really matter about just the preseason games and into regular season? Can they get anything from – it's been an emphasis.
Yeah, well, in my opinion, interceptions happen up front when you got a guy has his hand in the face of the quarterback, when the quarterback has to step up or step to the side or is off balance and can't put it exactly where he wants it. That's where a lot of interceptions come from. And that'll be, to me, they've got guys with decent hands. You know, Alexander should have, as talented as he is, he should have a good number of interceptions. King should, if he stays healthy. But it all comes down to how much pressure you get up front. The Packers had no pressure up front last year, and subsequently no turnovers. So I think that's where a lot of their interceptions will come from this year. If indeed they have that rush, if those guys pan out, they could have a lot of interceptions.
Hitting the third phase.
Yeah.
I think Sean Menenga would be really mad at us. He's listening to this right now.
Oh, I'm sure.
Saying, when are you going to get to my group?
Yeah.
And we'll bring it up because, you know, they're working through, I think, the kick return stuff we talked about during the OTAs. They are still cycling through. It's not a group of nine or whatever it was to start. I mean, it's Jawil Davis, Trevor Davis on kick returns. Usually you see Tremont Williams.
You can add Corey Grant, the new running back from Jacksonville, to that. I think he returned kickoffs in Jacksonville, averaged 23.6 yards. He's a 4.3 guy at 208 pounds or something like that. I mean, he's a blazer, perfect for kickoff returns. He's a straight line speed guy, so that'll be something to watch too. Keep an eye on him on kickoffs.
And so as they work through that, but obviously there looks to be another, you know, competition. Mason Crosby's on the non-football injury list, calf injury when he was training. He says it's not serious, no one's concerned, precautionary, all the things you usually hear. So that, what does that mean? Sam Ficken has attempted all 8 field goals to date. He missed 2. On his first go-around, made the only 2 he attempted over the weekend. I guess hard to tell what that means, but other than when does Mason Crosby need to come back in order to not make this a competition? Because I would imagine the longer he's out, and if Sam Ficken kicks in a game at Lambeau Field and hits a 60-yarder, shows that big leg. I don't know. When does it matter?
No. I mean, Mason Crosby, they know what he can do. He had some problems last year. He had, I mean, realistically, his long snapper was always an issue. I think they have a history there. Sam Ficken has to come in and just kick the pants off him. Yeah. I mean, he's got to get out there and hit some 50-yarders and be extremely consistent. You know, come out they'll have a competition on Friday night and in front of all those people, yeah. and he needs to come out and hit every single one of them. And whether Crosby kicks or not, he's kicking against Crosby's history.
Okay.
Until Crosby comes back. So all Ficken can do is worry about how many he makes. And then Crosby, when he gets back, we'll see if he's usually a pretty consistent guy. And they know what he is, even if he's lost a little bit. And they'll be measuring Ficken against that.
Yeah.
I think that's all you can say, unless Crosby comes out and misses everything, you know, right and left.
Or I guess, I mean, even, you know, gets back on the field and reaggravates yeah. whatever the issue is. And then you're wandering into dangerous territories when your specialists are dealing with muscle issues in their legs. But something to watch going forward. Whenever Mason Crosby comes back off the NFI. So, you know, off day, they get back going again. Family night, obviously, the highlight of the second week. Is there one thing that you would like to see that you feel is important to see in the following 4 days of the scripted practices? That are, you know, I don't know how you view the markers of camp.
Yeah, I don't really kind of think far ahead. I want to see how the offense develops. That's the story of training camp, and that's going to be a big part of what we're writing about, is how LaFleur's offense, whether they're taken to it, whether Rodgers is taking to it, and you know, are they ready for the start of the regular season? And it is going to be a process throughout camp. And will we be able to judge? Will it be better when they come out next week than they were this past week?
Right.
So that's what I'll be looking for.
Yeah. No, I think for me too. It's been interesting to see Rodgers and LaFleur and the other quarterbacks operate, because you're still getting, you know, whether it's the quarterback's calling timeout, whether there's some pre-snap issue that forces a re-huddle, mm-hmm. whether the head coach sees something and takes the time out of that period to sort of stop things and coach.
Mm-hmm.
So we've seen all that. To your point, I guess in their world, improvement would be either less of that or shorter segments mm-hmm. of it, where things are just a little smoother offensively. So,
yep.
Hey, look, and I guess the benefit for them is they've got a defense that kind of knows what it's doing with some real talent. So perhaps some of their issues are highlighted a little more.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if you're a fan or if you're Matt LaFleur, maybe that's what you want. Maybe you want that type of pressure.
Yeah.
Because as you wrote to start this week, Tom, you know, winning the playoff games under a first-year head coach, the odds are not with Matt LaFleur.
No.
So they're, you know, they need to do some work and get things right.
Okay. Well, yeah. Let's wrap this sucker up.
Yeah.
We've been yakking for almost 40 minutes. I hope you guys enjoy your bonus coverage.
Yeah.
And we're back.
Yeah. We'll be, you know, we've got some off days coming up and some other markers to hit, you know, and then we roll into the preseason. So be sure to download the PackersNews.com app, subscribe to JSOnline.com and PackersNews.com. For Tom Silverstein, I am Jim Ozarski, and we will catch you next time. Thank you.
Bye.